we're talking about the QAnon conspiracy theory that emerged in 2017. We're tracing its infiltration of mainstream politics here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So the headline from the Washington Post's editorial board this week, it goes like this: QAnon is a menace. Ignoring it isn't an option. So what is it and where did it come from? And at its heart, it's a conspiracy theory that says President Trump is in a secret war against evil, Satan-worshipping child sex abusers in government, business, and the media, and that that will lead to a reckoning. Followers also believe in a deep state plot against the president. Are you confused about QAnon? What do you want to know about what followers believe? Are there truths that QAnon is expressing that you think the media ignore? We're at 800-642-1234. Adrienne LaFrance is executive editor of The Atlantic, where she's reported on the QAnon phenomena as part of a series examining conspiracy theories. Adrienne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, help us, give us a sketch, if you will, of who or what QAnon is.
Well, it's complicated, so I'll try to simplify as much as I can. The sort of broadest contours of this conspiracy theory are the idea that Q is this intelligence or military insider who has proof that corrupt world leaders are secretly torturing children, and that Donald Trump is helping this mysterious figure sort of save the day and thwart these bad actors. In actuality, we do know there is a person or people, we don't know the identity of Q, but posting these sort of clues to an internet message board. And so the people who follow it see actual posts going up, and that lends an air of legitimacy to the whole thing, despite the fact that none of it's true.
Well, these loosely moderated forums known as Chan boards or image boards, they're getting a whole lot more attention now, which is, they used to be places where people would share memes or maybe discuss video games, but the site has now become a gathering place for right-wing nationalists, white supremacists. Why are Chan boards controversial?
Well, I should say they're not loosely moderated. They're not at all moderated. It's very much, you could think of them as sort of the last kind of anonymous place on the internet. It's a place where people can sort of, the culture of these image boards is sort of like a one-upmanship for who can be the most offensive or grotesque. And so you're right, that includes actual forms of extremism. And also sort of petty misogyny, and it's just a really gross corner of the internet.
How long did it take for people to notice Q and what the posts were getting at?
It gained traction pretty quickly, actually, and this is one of the mysteries of this conspiracy theory, is this question of, you know, people post all kinds of nonsense on the internet, so what was it about this one that sort of spread so quickly? It first appeared on 4chan in October of 2017, toward the end of October of 2017. And if you look back at some of the people who are like the best known figures who promote Q now, they were posting about it as soon as November and December. And so it gathered steam fairly quickly.
You also link the QAnon conspiracy before this post on December 4th, 2016, when an armed Edgar Welch went into Comet Pizza expecting to free children enslaved as part of a sex trafficking ring. What happened there?
So this happens a year before, just about a year before Q ever first posts on the internet. And so people may remember this Pizzagate conspiracy theory, and it's really sort of the foundation on which Q is built. And so this is December 2016, sort of in the months after Donald Trump's election. And this person who's been following the Pizzagate conspiracy theory, which came out of the WikiLeaks email dump, decides to take matters into his own hand, drives from North Carolina to Washington, D.C., where he thinks that children are being secretly tortured in a pizza shop, goes into the pizza shop on a Sunday afternoon, finds not an evil cabal of child torturers, but people just eating pizza at a restaurant because it's just a restaurant. And thankfully, no one was hurt. He did fire a weapon. I mean, he was carried two loaded guns into the pizza place. And then when he realized that the thing he was seeking wasn't actually there. He put down his weapons, walked outside, and surrendered to the police. So it's tied to QAnon because it's the same sort of worldview, the same belief that there's a secret group of powerful people abusing children, was borrowed from Pizzagate to build QAnon.
We're talking with Adrian LaFrance, executive editor of The Atlantic. We're looking at the rise of the QAnon conspiracy theory, what it means for American politics and the culture in America. You can join in. What questions do you have about it? How would you like the Republican Party to address the QAnon theories? Are you concerned that the GOP is tolerating or encouraging potentially dangerous theories among its members? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Adrian, for your reporting, you talked with several followers of QAnon. What is their attraction to Q?
So this was something that really surprised me, because when I set out to report this story that was our June cover story, I sort of had this thought that, you know, some large portion of the people who follow QAnon must know on some level that it's nonsense, but like perhaps they're drawn to it just because it's sort of gamified or just this odd curiosity. And I went in thinking that there were more skeptical folks with Q adjacency than I ended up finding out. What I found through my reporting is that people earnestly believe in this conspiracy theory. And not just that, but they really derive a sense of serenity or sort of almost like spiritual fulfillment from following it. And that was something that wasn't evident to me at the outset and really came into focus the more people I spoke with.
Yeah. Where did you find instances where you found a spiritual connection to QAnon?
Well, just the ways that people talked about it. So often when you see QAnon followers sort of crop up on the big social platforms, for most people who aren't going into their groups or really deeply familiar with the communities where they gather online, the place where you'll see them might be on Twitter, sort of like angrily reacting to someone doubting QAnon. And so there's only this really limited slice of where they pop up online and in the mainstream. But when I was interviewing folks who were what I came to call true believers, what I found instead of hostility, I mean, there was some hostility, but there also was a real sense of hopefulness, like people saying again and again that they were really, you know, filled with despair over the direction of our country, but now they found Q, they feel full of hope. And, you know, people explicitly telling me that God led them to Q, and just this unmistakable rhetoric of this sort of like preoccupation with the end times that you'll find in some evangelical Christianity. It just, the more I talked to people, the more it seemed really clearly tied to a religious worldview rather than just a conspiratorial one.
Did they believe that we are in end times?
Some of them do. I mean, one woman told me that she thinks we're probably on the edge of the apocalypse. And if you just look at the rhetoric of this belief system, it's a lot of like, you know, there's this idea that we're in the calm before the storm. That's one of the sort of in-group taglines. This idea that we're awaiting a great awakening, which of course is direct language lifted from earlier religious movements, and that on the other side of this storm that they refer to, that we'll reach some sort of salvation. And so it's all very religious in tone.
Talking about the QAnon conspiracy theory and its threats, challenges for social media sites, The Atlantic's Adrian LaFrance is our guide. Are you a QAnon follower? What is the attraction and why do you believe it? Conversely, are you worried about fringe ideas circulating in our politics and culture? How do you want the Republican Party to respond to the QAnon conspiracy theory? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Adrian LaFrance here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about the rise of the QAnon conspiracy theory here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the media watchdog Media Matters, there are 66 current or former 2020 congressional candidates who have given credence to QAnon. In Georgia, here's Marjorie Taylor Greene, who won the GOP nomination for a U.S. House seat in last week's primary.
Q is a patriot. He is someone that is very much loves his country, and he's on the same page as us, and he is very pro-Trump, okay? Now, he appears to have connections at the highest levels, all right? He's posted many things that seem to verify that he is the real deal, all right? So many of, it's not just someone poking in the dark, messing with people.
Are you confused about what QAnon is? What do you want to know about what his followers believe? It's 800-642-1234. We have the Atlantic's executive editor, Adrienne LaFrance, who stays with us, and she's been writing about conspiracy theories. Adrienne, we heard there Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia Republican who just won the primary for a U.S. House seat. How significant is it that a supporter of QAnon may likely be headed to Congress?
Well, it's really significant for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, it's concerning to think that any person who's representing the interests of the people would be a conspiracy theorist and, you know, anti-empiricism, anti-free press. The other reason it's significant is because QAnon is really a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. Like, at its core, it is about being supportive of Donald Trump. And so seeing that someone may enter Congress who supports Q shows just another way in which Trumpism will survive, even if the president isn't reelected in November.
Let's take a call. Rich is joining us from Rhinelander this morning. Hi, Rich.
Hi, thanks. I do not want the Republican Party identifying at all with QAnon. There is a group of powerful people who are persecuting children. It's known as ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they've been throwing kids in cages at our southern border and snatching infants and toddlers out of the arms of their parents and then losing the children.
Rich, how do you want the GOP to respond to Q?
The way any adult organization would respond to a set of lies, by saying, we cannot endorse in any way, shape, or manner this sort of nonsense.
Adrienne LaFrance, how has President Trump responded to QAnon?
Well, this is really interesting. So in general, he's sort of towed the same line he does in so many controversial manners, where he goes sort of right up to the edge of plausible deniability. He will retweet Q, pro-Q accounts, even in some cases retweeting some of their in-group lexicon, but being careful to say, like, I don't know what this means, but it sounds good. So that's sort of the space he occupies on a lot of controversial issues. The interesting thing is, just last week, in a briefing, a reporter directly asked him about Q and whether he supports it in the context of Marjorie Taylor Greene's primary win. And he answered a portion of her question, but even when pressed, ignored the question about Q twice. And so, you know, previously reporters haven't asked him directly about it because there are so many other pressing matters. When you have one question to ask the president, that might not be your first. But I think we'll see people pressing him on this more, and it will be interesting to see him probably continue to ignore it.
There was a columnist in the New York Times last week comparing QAnon with the Tea Party movement from a decade ago. Do you see parallels there?
There are some surface level parallels. I mean, I think you see between the Tea Party moment and this one, there's a sort of a revolutionary flair. So this idea that a revolution is coming, certainly borrowing the language of sort of like, this contingency is a group of patriots sort of banding together and taking matters into their own hands. So there's some like rhetorical similarities. I think one of the big differences, though, or probably the biggest one, is one of substance. So where the Tea Party was really concerned with fiscal conservatism, QAnon is not. It's really just concerned with promoting Donald Trump and his worldview.
Are there other figures in the GOP who are outwardly embracing QAnon or giving credence to it?
Well, I think, I mean, to your point about the Media Matters tally, we do see more and more members of or folks who are running for Congress, including a sort of pro-Q platform, which is fascinating. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's part of the GOP officially. It's sort of, you know, what your caller just now described. The Republican Party isn't going out of its way to say that Q is wrong or bad, and it's in part because doing so would indirectly malign the president because it's a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. And so they're in this awkward spot of, you know, it may not be in their near-term political best interest to reject Q. Of course, one would think that it would be in their long-term political best interest to reject a dangerous conspiracy theory. So they're in a sort of weird political spot there.
We're talking with Adrienne LaFrance, executive editor of The Atlantic, where she's been reporting on the QAnon phenomena as part of a series examining conspiracy theories. Do you think there's a deep state plot against President Trump? And if so, why? Why do you think that people believe there is a conspiracy theory to overthrow President Trump? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Harold now, who is driving through Wisconsin. Hi, Harold.
Hi.
Hi. What do you think of QAnon?
I believe a lot of what they have to offer. And your person there, a lot of what she's telling you is wrong. QAnon's been around since 2004. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's trying to lead people to the truth.
What is the truth, Harold?
It's sure in the hell not the Democratic Party. Anything that you Google, anything, they lead you in the wrong direction.
So Adrienne, Harold, they're saying that it has much earlier roots, a follower of QAnon, and very much targeting the Democratic Party.
Well, I haven't seen any evidence of Q's existence prior to its appearance on 4chan in 2017. But I think Harold is certainly right that it borrows from earlier conspiracy theories and narratives that are features of earlier conspiracy theories. I mean, if you look back to the Crusades even, you'll find anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that claimed that the Jews were torturing children in secret. And so if you look at sort of the long arc of the kinds of stories that people make up, to explain their anti-establishment views, you'll find the same themes coming up again and again over the centuries. And Q certainly is in that chain.
Let's bring in Randy now in Madison with thoughts on Q. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. QAnon, hydroxychloroquine coincidence. I'm interested here in Madison, Wisconsin. We have some people who are very much into the inside job. I can't remember the broad label for the inside job thing on September 11th attacks. And it strikes me how odd it is to have a conspiracy theory that is so pro-government, that is telling people that people at the top, including the president, are leading this crusade that's very benign. And how does that evolve? How does that develop?
Randy, thanks. Adrienne?
I think, yeah, so this idea, I think if I understand correctly, one of the questions that it naturally prompts is, for this to be true, how many people would actually have to be in on it? And also the sort of interesting contradiction that if President Trump is in fact the savior figure of this conspiracy theory, which is anti-establishment, why would it be focused on arguably the most powerful person in the world as being the savior? And that's just one of many, many contradictions. I mean, I think one thing that will be interesting to ask Marjorie Greene, if in fact she enters Congress, is, given her support of Q, will fighting child abuse be her number one platform as a member of Congress? And if it's not, why not?
When you started your reporting, you were hoping to find who is behind Q. How far did you get?
Not far enough, I'm afraid. I mean, that was one of my central questions, is who is behind this account that's posting these so-called Q drops, these clues on the internet? You know, there are theories upon theories and all different sort of subgroups within Q who believe different things about who it might be. And I didn't get far enough to say with any certainty who it is, but I certainly had a chance to sort of at least get a sense of who stands to profit from Q. And that to me is remains a sort of interesting path to go down. You know, 8kun, which is the successor of 4chan, the site where Q drops are now posts. The folks who run that site are really interesting and a bit cryptic about their involvement. And then some of the people who have huge YouTube followings, and, you know, one person has even quit his full-time job, he says, to follow Q full-time. And so I don't know who Q is, but I do think we should pay attention to the folks who stand to profit from it.
Adrienne LaFrance is executive editor of The Atlantic. She's explaining about who or what QAnon is, the rise in the past several years as a conspiracy theory. What questions do you have about this group and what it stands for? There's room to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more conversation about QAnon, maybe hear from you after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming plans as this week unfolds. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Democratic National Convention from Milwaukee. It's a mix of virtual. Some live events are underway. We bring you up to speed and a recap tonight through Thursday night starting at 8. That's here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're exploring the rise of QAnon and the far right-wing conspiracy theory that, among other things, believes in a deep state and a ring of Satan-worshipping, child-trafficking criminals led by Democrats. We're learning more about the movement and its reach with your questions at 800-642-1234. Adrienne LaFrance is executive editor at The Atlantic and has been writing about QAnon. She stays with us. Let's take another call now. John is joining us from Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed Adrienne's June cover story, and I've been sharing it a lot with people who ever have questions about what Q is. I was wondering in reporting what kind of parallels you found with Q and the, like, satanic panic movement in the 80s and 90s. Previously, you talked about the Tea Party comparison, and I've seen some things online that the whole satanic panic in the media and culture in the 80s and 90s was more of an apt comparison for Q currently.
John, thanks so much. Adrienne.
Well, thanks, John, for your kind words, first of all. And this is such an interesting question. I didn't get deeply into this comparison in my reporting, and I don't think any of it made it into the final piece, but I did spend quite a bit of time looking back at some of the Ronald Reagan's preoccupation with the end times in the early 80s, which became a sort of scandal around the time of the election. And so that, I think, if you were to trace back sort of where some of that panic emerged, Reagan's sort of preoccupation with the apocalypse would definitely come up. So I don't know if that fully answers your question. I do think, though, that there is a similar cultural thing happening within Q as what sort of led to that earlier panic, which is, and this certainly bared out in my reporting, which is when you sort of challenge people on, like, well, how could you possibly believe this? A thing that I heard a lot was, you know, the stakes are so high. If there is even a remote chance that one child could be getting hurt, why wouldn't I take it seriously and look into it? And of course, you know, you can understand that emotional sentiment, but there's no facts around it to support it. And we do know that there are lots of ways to sort of attempt to fight the child abuse that is real. So the fixation on fabricated child abuse is really interesting.
Why did QAnon settle, if you will, on child abuse? Why focus on child trafficking?
I think it goes back to the same thing of it is incredibly compelling to people because it's an awful truth that child abuse is a real problem. And so I think you're more likely to find a captive audience who who is moved or stirred by the idea that this could be happening. Another suggestion that came up in my reporting, one person put it to me this way, that, you know, if you're looking at a group of people who's trying to justify their support for Donald Trump, who, you know, is someone who is of flawed character and lies all the time, and, you know, what sort of narrative would you need to redeem a person like that? And this idea that if you could say that all of the things that he does are in service of ultimately saving the children, there is this sort of justification built into that worldview.
Let's bring in Joe now in Star Lake with thoughts on this. Joe, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's such a big subject. There's so many moving parts. I've been fascinated by the psychology of this idea of abusing children. And in the 1990s, there were very big, large movies popular with teenagers, the Wes Craven franchise in particular, the Nightmare on Elm Street, and then the Scream movies. And this is really the theme of those. And even in one of the movies, Wes Craven himself says it's about the death of innocence. But it's about a child who has these nightmares, and this terrible creature, Freddy Krueger, comes in and murders all the people around him. And he's always abetted by the establishment figures of medical people. The doctors never understand. They always take the wrong decisions in a really sinister way. And then also educators. Henry Winkler plays the principal, who in fact becomes, you know, part of this whole thing. So I think that the seeds for this psychology have been really sown broadly in the culture more than we realize. And I think it's just one manifestation of it now.
Adrian, what are the implications there for pop culture reaching back to the 90s and the element of Hollywood in this?
It's really interesting. So I, of course, remember those movies and remain terrified. And I hadn't thought about it in the context of the anti-establishment worldview. And I think it's a really smart and nuanced observation that a big part of the Q worldview is being anti-establishment. I mean, that's one of the core things. And it also, an anti-establishment worldview is core to a person's proneness for conspiracism in the first place. And so you do see within the Q narrative this anti-Hollywood strain, which it makes sense in part because, again, it's a pro-Trump conspiracy theory, and Trump positions himself as anti-Hollywood, given that Hollywood is seen as sort of like the elite of the elite. But in terms of how these same stories play out in pop culture itself, I think that your caller is right that there is a lot more there if we sort of take the time to look for it.
We're talking with Adrian LaFrance, executive editor of The Atlantic, who has been reporting on the QAnon conspiracy for the magazine in its June issue. You can join in. Are you confused about what QAnon is? What do you want to know about what his followers believe and the movement itself? Join in 800-642-1234. Adrian, you interviewed Hillary Clinton for your article. What was her take on the QAnon movement?
Well, two things stood out to me about my conversation with her on Q. One was just that she understandably finds it really scary. I mean, she said directly she's grateful that she still has really good security because she knows that these people are, you know, just there's really violent rhetoric about her. And people have tried to you know, come after her before. And so that was one. And then the other was just the extent to which she was surprised in the last presidential election by just how coordinated these systems of misinformation and propaganda and conspiracy thinking are. And just the realization, I mean, the way she put it was it really wasn't until after the election that she realized just how dangerous and sophisticated the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theories actually is.
Let's bring in John now in Illinois. John, hi.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I had a comment and then a question. The comment would be if the author thought that the Trump administration might have been a boon or might be a boon for intelligence agencies, because it seems like now a lot of these persons unknown on the right who might have been previously, you know, hidden are now coming forward, and a lot of their activities are now identities that are being made apparent to the intelligence agencies. like during the 60s with the COINTELPRO operation. And also I had a question regarding social networking. I have friends on Facebook who seem to have had their accounts hijacked, or maybe they were willingly taken over by QAnon people. And I wonder if you had any information about whether these accounts might have been, or the people on them have been paid anything by QAnon to allow them to. These are people that had a lot of followers. I know one friend has 5,000 followers on Facebook. And it seems like they're targeting people who have a lot of friends, quote unquote, to use their propaganda.
John, thanks. Two different questions. Let's tackle social media platforms first. Adrian, how have they approached QAnon, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera?
They've been pretty hands off and have selected sort of opportune moments to talk about how they're trying to crack down on the spread of misinformation on their platforms. But in actuality, they've done very little. I mean, the social web platforms like Facebook and Twitter have really famously or infamously said that they don't see themselves as editorial in any capacity, and that they're simply sort of neutral channels for whatever their users want to post. And so that has included, you know, people who are spreading these dangerous conspiracy theories. So they've talked about crackdowns, but I mean, I just last week I looked at, you know, for my reporting for our cover story in June about QAnon, I joined a bunch of Facebook groups about Q as part of my reporting, just to sort of keep tabs on them. And just even after Facebook said that it was cracking down on QAnon, I was still getting flooded with recommendations of other Q groups to join. So they're still really everywhere on those platforms.
Yeah, I mean, would taking down posts on Twitter, would that do anything to this movement?
Well, first of all, it's a very sort of whack-a-mole approach, totally. And also, you found that other platforms have really cracked down on major Q groups. I mean, it was a couple years ago now that Reddit removed its biggest pro-Q group because that they termed the decision as having been to try to fight the incitement of violence through that group. And in that case, you see that the people who follow Q really take an approach of like making sure that they have a presence on every platform, knowing that the platforms could remove these groups. But so on one hand, I don't know that it makes a difference because it's hard to do the sort of whack-a-mole effectively. On the other hand, I think that, if we had platforms that took more responsibility for the material posted to their platforms, then it could make a real difference in society for the information that people encounter.
We're talking with Adrienne LaFrance of The Atlantic, who stays with us. She wrote a piece called The Prophecies of Q about American conspiracy theories and why they're entering a dangerous phase. It came out in June. What do you think of QAnon? What do you see as the attraction? Are you worried about fringe ideas circulating in our politics, in our culture? Join in at 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's a morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with The Atlantic's executive editor, Adrienne LaFrance. We're learning about the rise of QAnon and why conspiracy theories about a left-wing plot against President Trump are not going away. One question is, how will media sites respond to QAnon supporters? Another question is, what about lawmakers on Capitol Hill who lend credence to the extremism and the movement itself? Talking about those things, let's bring in John now in Madison. A lot of Johns this morning. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much, Atlantic. Excellent magazine. To start off with, Trump said, I want low information voters, which means poorly educated, poorly read, not high school, not barely get out of high school, maybe high school dropouts. He wants ignorant people who will follow him. He's a con artist. We were told by Bloomberg before he was elected, Trump was a con artist, a cheat, and a liar out to stiff anybody he can. He is a con artist, and he'll pick up on anything that he can, that the weak-minded will latch on to.
John, thanks. Adrian, Hillary Clinton, in your interview, and some of Q's followers believe that President Trump is actually QAnon. Why do you think that? And, you know, what do you think about Trump behind this?
Well, I don't think, I mean, first, I should say, I don't know who is actually posting things as Q. I suppose anything's possible. I don't think that it's Trump himself, if I had to guess. But I do think that Trump and his supporters see Q for what it is, which is a group, a growing group of people who are supporting Donald Trump, which is also why he is reluctant to ever sort of engage with or dismiss it for what it is, a conspiracy theory. It's fundamentally a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. And so it really is, you know, arguably the truest expression of Trumpism there is.
Last year, the FBI labeled QAnon a domestic terrorist threat. Has there been violence connected with Q followers?
Well, so there's certainly the Pizzagate example, which is a conspiracy theory that predates Q, but is very closely related. And then there have been other cases where, you know, someone who is being charged with a murder has had links to Q or has been seen to have followed Q. There was someone who took an armored car and parked it over Hoover Dam and refused to move, who was a Q supporter. And so certainly, I mean, the FBI is correctly identifying this as an extremist movement and treating it as dangerous as such.
Should we be concerned at all in terms of the possibility of violence from Q followers? What did your conspiracy experts, people who researched this, what did they tell you?
Well, I think the folks who study conspiracy theories often will say that, you know, conspiracy theorizing is something that will always be with us and always has. And so there's always going to be some portion of the population who is more prone to conspiracy thinking. And that's certainly true now. The thing that's different now is the ability for these conspiracy theories to spread rapidly and across the world. It's not just the United States, interestingly enough, given that it's a pro-Trump conspiracy theory, but it really has spread all over the world. And, you know, there is the threat of violence, certainly, which is scary, but it's also, you know, a more existential threat. We're talking about a mass rejection of reason, a mass rejection of empiricism, and a growing group of people who's breaking with reality.
Is a spread due to the internet and our ability to reach people anywhere, anytime?
Absolutely. And if you look even just a couple of decades ago, the primary way that a conspiracy theory would spread was through letters to the editor of a newspaper. So if you look back, you know, old newspaper archives.
How quaint. Sorry.
Know, right? And so you'll find sort of like claims that the government's controlling the weather or that aliens have arrived. And it might have been this one-off letter that's sort of a curiosity in an otherwise factual newspaper. Now we don't need letters to the editor. Every single person is a publisher as long as they have an internet connection. And so we're talking about, you know, Facebook alone is like a magazine with 2 billion editors. There's 2 billion people who can post whatever they want to the platform. And so the scale of the problem, I mean, it's not just about the speed of social sharing, but also just the sheer magnitude of the size of these platforms.
Let's bring in Vincent now in Wauwatosa. Hi, Vincent. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I'd just like to say that I don't accept that QAnon is conspiracy theory. It's fantasy. A conspiracy theory at least has some facts behind it, some possible truth, whether it's true or not. A theory has to have some evidence. This is just imagination. This is just fantasy. This is not backed by anything. There's no possibility that any of this stuff is true. It's just people's daydreams. And to me, that I'm sorry, but this is below conspiracy theory.
Vincent, thanks. Adrian, this falls outside. It's outlandish, Vincent says, falls outside of what even a conspiracy theory is.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with the spirit of his comment that it is a total fantasy and rejection of all empiricism. I think if you look at sort of the etymology of conspiracy theorizing, I don't think that all conspiracy theories have to contain an element of truth. I think it's more that they ladder up to a common worldview, which often involves sort of people believing that a group of powerful people are sort of pulling the strings or operating in secret against the rest of us. This idea that the world is rigged. And you can find actual evidence that some aspects of the way society is run is rigged against the marginalized, but it doesn't mean that all conspiracy theories have to have any more truth to them than that.
If President Trump loses the election in November, what do you see happening with the QAnon movement? And then conversely, if he wins?
So I think it's growing no matter what. And I think if he loses, there's a certain, you know, even more incentivization to support the theory for those who are predisposed to it. The theory already is based, this conspiracy theory already is based on the idea that its followers are sort of victims. And so if their main the main figure they support, Donald Trump, is no longer in power, that only further sort of exacerbates a sense of victimhood, which I think will inspire people to get more involved in it. It's also, in my view, the way that Trumpism could survive Trump. And so I think, you know, it's not going anywhere.
Are there leaders in the Republican Party who are trying to combat the QAnon narrative, or is it more unified than that in exploiting it?
You know, there have been some cases where folks have spoken out against it. I think the House Minority Leader just in the past couple of weeks, in the context of this congressional candidate from Georgia who's a pro-Q person, he spoke out against it and cast it as dangerous and alarming. And some other party leaders have done the same, but not nearly as many as you'd hope in terms of, you know, hoping that it would be very easy to call out blatant and dangerous misinformation.
How is the Democratic Party at this moment responding or trying to combat the QAnon conspiracy theory? What's going on within the party?
I mean, I think there's all kinds of rhetoric that any politician is going to use to benefit its own party. And so I think you're seeing that on either side. In terms of actual, like, how to actually fight the problem of the spread of conspiracy theories, I think we are seeing a sort of more engaged and more knowledgeable Congress looking at the total sort of power and dominance of a small, powerful few tech companies. So just looking, you know, late last month at the testimony from Google and Amazon and Facebook, in Congress, I did notice that the level of sort of sophistication and understanding these tech platforms has notably improved. So I think some members of Congress are beginning to kind of piece things together that way.
In the final moments we have with you, what are you watching for within QAnon going forward?
I think just trying to continue to gauge how the movement's growing. It's really hard to quantify because it's so disaggregate, which is part of its power. And so I think just paying attention to the places where Q supporters gain actual power, like this congressional candidate, certainly looking at the president's implicit support of the movement. These are the places to watch to see sort of how it will cement itself going forward.
Adrian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Adrian LaFrance is executive editor of The Atlantic, where she wrote about the QAnon conspiracy theory for the magazine in June. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.